thanks for coming to the Freud Museum. My name's Ivan Ward, and I'm the Purchase Director of the Museum. I haven't actually seen Patricia's show, and luckily he's brought some of it with him, so some of the cushions here, which are very beautiful. And the last time we had a couch in this room was a few years ago, and it was an exhibition by students from the Royal College of Arts. And in this room, one of the students bought a couch, and it was a performance piece where she had her back sewn up like a corset. So she'd actually, so instead of having a corset, it was actually in her flesh. The back was sewn up, and she laid like this sort of Venus of Rockaby, with her back to the audience, and people were piling, and it was a very powerful piece. So hopefully we're not going to get that today, but we do have some stitching in the cushions and some suturing going on elsewhere. So it's a great pleasure to welcome Renata Celestial. And Tuzio to discuss some of his work and some of Renata's work, hopefully. And you probably all know she's a philosopher and actually a lawyer. But he's studied with Professor Laura Ljubljana and the University of Birkbeck. Great pleasure to welcome you both. And I'll just hand it over to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you everyone for coming. So we decided to be a little bit playful in this setting. And hello, Patricia.
Hi, Elena.
So you came here to kind of, let's say, expose yourself to the audience and to say a little bit about your work in a kind of a different setting. So let us start with the kind of question: why at all you became an artist? Where was this urge? Was someone in the family the artist? Did you admire someone? Did you really make a choice? Was like something in you that just you could not do?
Okay, good question to start. I feel like in a position that I'm very comfortable at this moment. I really mean it, in the sense that I feel surrounded by people, but I'm almost feeling alone, in that sense. And this might track me back actually to when I was a teenager, or even earlier, when I was a kid. I think that everything started by hearing people around me saying that I was a good drawer. And that particular moment has been important because I felt that I had an ability. So I don't think at that moment I already realized that that would have been my future, and that I would have devoted so much of my energy in the future towards that, but it's certainly been the beginning of my interest in art, I think. This sort of appreciation kept going during the years. And even if I didn't study art when I was in high school, so I was doing scientific studies, I kept on drawing and painting on my own. And then one day my father told me that he had a patient. My father is a doctor, and this patient was a painter, like a painter of the town. And he said, like, would you like to go and train yourself? And I was very curious. I mean, I didn't think so much, but in a way this sort of started like that, and then it became more and more compulsive with the years. So even before finishing my high school I did devote most of my time to art practicing. And it was very important for me because at the time I had a very normal social life, I think, and I was quite open with people and everything else, but I had this time for me. I used to paint in the basement of my house, and also it was a moment of escape, I think, from the normal routine and from the family issues and from everything that was around.
What kind of medicine does your father practice?
He heals nose and throat and ears, which is called Otorino Laryngoiatra.
That's a very sexual kind of practice.
And my sister is a psychoanalyst. And she's as well, actually. She's a doctor. She's still studying, actually. Yeah.
And the mother?
The mother is a teacher and a principal of an elementary school, so a pedagogue.
Wow, but the doctor, you know, of the mouth, you know, that's amazing, because it's really one of the most erotic organs, and it appears that from early on, eroticism has been sort of part of your work, especially the Lustful Turk, which we can probably show some images.
Yeah, which we prepared.
So, was it the teenage years when you said that, you know, you discovered art, that was sort of the time of sort of discovering eroticism usually. And I think that this work of yours is kind of truly, you know, kind of openly erotic, while other types which we will show is erotic but in a more kind of a hidden way.
Yeah. Certainly this project, which is called the Lustful Turk, is a project that in a mature start moment of my practice, put it together in a way certain aspects of my relationship to sexuality that I might have already had when I was a teenager. And yes, some of my works as a teenager was actually quite provocative in the images that I created. I don't have images of these works, of course, but I remember that I used to create images sometimes to provoke my father and to in the little domesticity of the environment to scandalize him a bit.
The color of those cushions in your Lustful Turk, it can be sort of like, you know, the vagina, or it can be inside of the mouth or something.
Yeah, this the beginning of the of the works that I'm carrying on doing with furniture elements like the cushions, started with this project with the Lustful Turk. Just to say briefly that the Lustful Turk is a project about an erotica novel that was published here in England in the Georgian Times. And it's true that the first times I used cushions, I wanted to have the color of the skin. So the pink is strictly related to humanizing these objects. And in fact, these pieces are in many cases like portraits of characters of the book. So they are actually there allegorically to stand for some of the characters of this book.
Now this one is very interesting, the one where you have cushions and then just legs coming out. And that's kind of, when I saw this, I started realizing that cushion is a weapon. Somewhere you can kill a person. It was for you a dangerous object too, or just a kind of a sublime, beautiful?
Well, in this image, with the many cushions, like on the top of, one or two or three people, I'm looking to find it.
Yeah.
I was very actually interested in finding an ambivalence image in which the cushions might have been actually other bodies that this person were having sex with, or actually being suffocated by.
Yeah.
It's true that the cushion, if I'm not wrong, is one of the first elements, is one of the main elements that people use to kill other people, right?
Yeah.
And for me, the relationship with this object is also like metaphorically important, because I relate with this object with also a sense of burden, like as in sense of traditional terms, you know, cushions and curtains or tassels are objects of traditional work, which I find very much pertinent with my own culture as an individual and as an Italian, and they are suffocating in a way, but at the same time they might be the object of the desire of the encounter between this person and
But orgasm is like, you know, we call it a little death. So when you said that you were observing, that you have kind of an image of sex maybe happening inside this mountain of cushions you built, it appears that, you know, death and desire come quite close in this image.
Yeah, I think it's mostly what I felt while painting this piece. Indeed. And isn't it what Lacan called Jus Sans?
Yes, absolutely. But why cushions? That was sort of my first. What memory of cushions do you have from your childhood?
The realities that I don't have. Like, many people may think that I was living in a house full of cushions. And that's not really the case. Like, if I trace back the furniture in my house, it's a rather banal, normal, bourgeois environment. And of course we had cushions, as in many other houses. I particularly remember one that was made with Chinese decorations, so Orientalist drawings on the top, on silk. I don't know how much this can relate. I don't think much, honestly. Another, because I think that what connects me to these objects is far more symbolic than autobiographical.
Yeah, but even if you stay, you don't need to stay with the object. If you stay with the word cushion, you know, we can provide a cushion for someone by, you know, setting a stage, you know, helping the child financially to start the life, or, you know, the cushion might be even a protection in a symbolic way from something. So did your parents in some way provide some kind of a cushion for you, or were they suffocating you with a kind of a cushion, not a visible cushion, but an expectation that you have to follow a particular path, or protecting you too much?
Well, I certainly feel this happening, that happened and is still happening with the figure of my father. I think my father has been a bit behaving like my mother in my life. So he's been always very protective and still is the sort of character that constantly asks me if I'm okay, if I'm fine, if I have everything I need. And this irritates me a lot, because I find that my mother doesn't do it, and I don't mind it, of course, but my father, which should be an example of maybe an important figure to emulate, is actually behaving like someone I never wanted to emulate, and I never wanted to be like. So with this sort of protection, he has been letting me escape from him all my life.
Mm-hmm. How does he react to the figures of father that you use in the paintings?
There is a lot of reference to the father figure in my work, and originally, I found this father figure in history. So most of my big early works, when I was a student at the academy, and until just a couple of years ago, they related very much to certain topics of either Italian history or Italian artists, such as Arte Povera, Pino Pascali, which I made a documentary about, in which I sort of like projected this fatherhood dimension. So, I sort of, if I can psychoanalyze myself now. I sort of recreated my father that I didn't like in reality in my works.
Who is this? The previous image, isn't that like a, as part of one of your projects where you speak about the family, the previous one, the cushion?
No, this is still part of the Lust Futur project, and just to be brief, the Lust Futur is a novel that I was very fascinated by because it's an erotica that is staged in the Orient. It's an Orientalist erotica, and I've always been very much interested in Orientalism, especially in Italian relationship to the former colonies. And this book is quoted by Edward Said in Orientalism, actually. And when I read about it, I was very curious to indagate and know more about the book, and it turned out that I made the project, and I worked on that for 2 years. The story is the story of an English lady called Emily Barlow, who is traveling to India to meet an uncle of her, but her boat is shipwrecked, and she's kidnapped by the Sultan of Algeria and introduced into the harem of the Sultan. In that setting, she mainly discovers sex. At the beginning, the Sultan violates her, so she's totally scared and screaming at him. It's important to say that we read this story through a pen, because the book is an epistolary erotica, and she's writing letters to a friend of her in England. And in the middle of the book, she fell in love with the Turk. So there is a sort of switch, and from being totally scared, she starts to enjoy the sexual practice. After that, the Turk introduces her to anal sex, and the same path reappens before she's scandalized, and after a while she starts to enjoy that. And at the end of the book, a new girl who is introduced into the harem castrates the Turk, which is also a concept which for me was very interesting, because mainly this phallus is kept by Emily Barlow, the protagonist, which I've been talking until now, as a simulacra, as a reliquia, and she brings it back with her to England. So she sort of keeps all the memories of this encounter with this otherness, which is represented by the Orient and by the Turk, into that specific anatomical part, which of course is the very symbolic part for psychoanalysis as well. And this piece in particular is part of that setting, because the project is about illustrating the work of the novel without really going as an illustration, but creating objects and artworks that would point into some of the stereotypes and concepts of the book. And this is called the Lust Futur Souvenir, which is what she did with the remaining part of the tour.
So why did you start using the tassel in your work? It's another weapon.
Anecdotally, I was in Rome staging this exhibition at Villa Medici, the Academy of France, and I entered the Passamaneri, and I knew exactly that these objects were part of my exhibition a few weeks before installing. If I want to criticize, you know, to see, you know, ideologically why I've been using this object, I think it has to do with the specific attitude that I decided to take in the recent years, which is the one of using pre-modernist elements of furnishing in my work. So I didn't plan it. I didn't say, okay, these are the elements that make sense for me in my work, but they started to have more and more importance in my practice after I worked. And this was another project about the father figure, to the figure of Tommaso Buzzi, who is an Italian architect that rejected modernism in the 20s, when modernism were very much linked with fascism regime. So I saw in this figure, in this very sort of mysterious and unknown figure of the Italian architecture, an example of how someone rejected the mainstream, which was the modernism. And this is very important to for me, because what happened in Italy between modernism and fascism is very peculiar. It didn't happen elsewhere. So for me, it's quite impossible to work with modernist elements, as many of my peers or mates do, because they live in a postmodern world. Because in Italy, this has been a moment of oblivion. And in that sense, the tassel, as the cushion, stands for a very specific ideological and political object. And therefore, yeah, I could say it's a weapon, yeah.
You can strangle someone.
So yeah, because the tassel in the loose culture project also becomes a wig. This is a wallpaper. Like this little drawing here.
So what happens when your cushions start sort of building a tower? Why a tower?
As I mentioned before, in this works, the cushions resemble a human figure, yeah? They're portraits of the characters of the book. And while in the paintings they never illustrate anything that relates to the book, these objects are actually titled like Portrait of Emily Barlow, as in this case, or Portrait of the Sultan of Algeria, as in the Black Pillow. And they're very ironic in the way in which they actually configure a phallocratic image and representation of
it. But here you introduce the curtain also. So what's the curtain hiding?
Well, the curtain is, of course, this threshold, no? This object that we use in our domesticity, but that was very much present in the pre-modern world, much more than in the modern world. Because, as you know, modern has been about transparency, mm-hmm. and has been about showing to the exterior what's happening in our houses and create a sense of transparency and create a sense of, like, there is nothing that I'm hiding from you. The curtain is actually the opposite of that. It's the element that created separation between one environment and the other. And for me, this is one of the most important elements of the curtain as a symbolic element in my practice. The curtain is something that you always want to open up to see what's after that, what's on the other side. And the curtain is very sexy also, in a way. I mean, I always felt very attracted to the textile of curtains. And again, the use and make of curtains is, again, for me, reconnectable to the political statement of using a pre-modernist element in my work, which is very, very important. This piece here is the portrait of another character of the book, a woman, of course, and it's split in a way that creates this sort of very vertical gaps, entrances, and yeah.
I perceived the curtain also here as a kind of a way to, you know, deal with one's desire, especially because you are saying that this book is all about desire, the fantasy of the main character, the Emily woman. And so I read those curtains of yours as a kind of a screen, a fantasy screen, which allows her to create those desires that she had about, you know, the lustful Turk and sort of oriental man.
Yeah, but in a way, it's, you know, who is her? She's the invention of a Western person, a man, probably in his middle age, who is fantasizing about that kind of setting, and he's putting a name to a protagonist, which is called Emily Barlow, which he wants to imagine. So in a way, she is a mirror of the author fantasy. Yeah? She's, as you said, she's a screen. I would say a mirror of this person fantasy. But what mostly attracted me to this book is the fact that no one signed the authorship of the book. Because it was very problematic to, already at the time, to write a book about these topics, especially about anal sex, which was forbidden in England and in Europe. So he didn't want to put an authorship, and the book is anonymous. This anonymity makes the book a sort of product of our collectiveness, of Western collectiveness, and therefore Emily Barlow is a mirror of our desires and our fantasies. But the mirror is in a way better represented by an opaque curtain rather than a reflective object, I think.
Behind your curtains there is nothing, it's just a wall.
Yeah, it's like a painting for me. It's actually made of fabric, but it's painting, so there is nothing that you can move or open up. It just creates the impression that you could. But, I mean, for me, these pieces are also, like, in a way, again, related to this fatherhood. It's just like when I see this piece, it makes me think of Fontana a bit, for example, and this idea of the... Yeah, the painting as opening up of the space and the installation, and the femininity, of course. But yeah, it plays also around these formal aspects.
Yeah, and this is another type of work, you know, that you have been doing. Sometimes sort of paintings inside of paintings. What is this about?
This is like the last piece of the Lustful Turk series.
But you go back to the same thing in your current work, in some of them.
Yeah, what I did has been using parts of previous paintings that composed the Lustful Turk
series
of works. And I cutted them, and I used them as images for composing this painting, which is like an epilogue. And in a way, this was for me a moment of abandoning this project after 2 years of work. And as I mentioned before, like the book finishes with the castration of the Turk, and I found no better way to finish it, my work, by amputating my own work and putting these images in to create a final image. Yeah.
But in some way you didn't kill them, you kind of remade them into a new painting.
Yeah. It's again like a bit like this process of the Jewish science, maybe, you know? Like the orgasm, this moment of pleasure is always the moment in which you die as well. And here, while dying, I'm released in a way because I finished this project, and I also, you know, decided to take elements of the previous paintings, in which anatomical parts are shown, because that really symbolizes that the paintings are part of myself, in a sense.
But in a way, you are kind of going back to what Freud has been saying about sort of Eros and Thanatos, you know, always one going from one to another, and in some way you have those kind of moments of creation ex nihilo. You want to ruin something, but actually you create out of that ruin a new thing. And that's kind of, is this a newer version of your work when you're doing a painting inside of the painting?
Yeah, this is actually a new version of the Lustful Turk installation that is now on view in Antwerp, in MUCA, in the Museum of Antwerp. And the paintings are displayed on the top of my drawings. I mean, in this sense, there is not much will of mine to destroy my work, but more to contain my work within my own work itself, so like to create an uterus for my own work, like instead of giving it an empty wall, a white wall, just to surround the objects with the same objects, which are though treated very differently. So so they can read, can be read differently, in that sense. And what you said is true, like whenever you find you, whenever I try to break any rule in the work, I mean, even with this today, I wanted to make a talk, and the talk was for me probably a way to dissect the work, to, you know, to analyze it, and then I told you, Renata, what should we do? And then we came up with the idea that this should have been a performance, you know? So
it's kind of dangerous with this, it's going to be, you set it up in a way that's going to cost you dearly.
But that's what artists do all the time, no? When you make a show, you are there to be criticized, and you're there to be analyzed, and you're there to be instrumentalized, and you're there to be, you're just not anymore an owner of your own work, no? You just give the work to be eaten and killed by the public.
That become like an angel, like this one. Uh-huh, so we are coming to the family back. Now, I imagine that your parents were not very happy when they saw themselves in this exhibition.
I don't see why you're saying this.
So the red one is the mother, if I remember.
Yeah. So, Me, Mom, Mr. Med is a very recent project of mine. And there are three installations in the space. They are, each of them represent one of my family members, and the father is the first artwork that you encounter in the exhibition.
This phallus, cuts up phallus.
And they're cushions again. So you see what you
want to see.
But really, like, I'm using cushions for everything.
I'm still with the loose pull Turk and kind of with the phallus that, you know, was cut away from him, and then I see him here, so that's your father.
Yeah, it's green wool, like this fabric that really reminds me of him. Like, you know, the...
Why green?
Yeah, I have this image of him in green. Although I have to say, like, these works are not really portraits of my family characters, in the sense that, you know, I think of my father in that sense, and I depict that. I try to be as much detached from my memory of them as possible. But in some parts I still see why, yeah, that there are elements that actually I cannot deny comes back from an image I have of them. And in the father especially, I think, because...
So this is the father?
Yeah, this is the father, and it's made out of three bolster cushions. Bolster cushions are these cushions that I use for sofas as well. I think in the one downstairs there is one. Oversized, so like humanized in this case as well. And I choose three different kind of fabrics. One is a clothing fabric, is the green wool. Where can you see that? Yeah, this is a... And the other one is pink sweat, so it's a kind of very skin sort of fabric. And the other one is brown velvet. They lie on each other like in a Mikado game, you know, the Japanese game when you just put all the elements and then you release your hand and they just spread.
So you can remake your father the way, someday you kind of put it in another way, your father.
it's like a disaster, you know, the father, you let it go.
Kind of impotent. Why is this bird there?
Again, like, this is really comes from a sort of, like, more biographical element, and my father is a collector of birds.
Live or dead birds? Stuffed birds?
No, live birds, yeah.
Live birds.
Like, I think his only passion in his life is, like,
the throat. And the birds.
And the birds, yeah. And and what I wanted to create with these elements, in a way, is that was to have a balance between object-based and more live elements in the work, like performative elements, And for the father, yes, I picked up the bird, which is, of course, very symbolic, and it's something that everybody can relate to as an object.
So which kind of birds he likes the most?
Yeah, canarinis. And it's important, I think, because you made me think that canarinis are the only birds that live, that die outside of the cage. So they are unable to provide food for themselves when they are left out of the cage. They need to be protected by...
So they need the cushion.
Or sometimes. They were born in captivity.
Yeah.
They were created to be... to be caged. Mm. And, yeah.
Does he have any lovebirds?
Really?
You know, the birds which kind of need to be the two together.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't go see it personally. I just know that he's still doing it.
Are you sure they are still alive? So why tassels birds?
They are mine, you know, like, these elements are now sort of an element that I can reconfigure to make everything becoming more personal, in a way. And it's a setting. It's a setting for the performance of the bird. Mm. They just live with the bird. They're little tassels, yeah?
Yes. And this is... which member of the family is this?
This is the sister. So the sister is configured as a pile of cushions. And this is, in a way, the piece in the show which is more related to this moment of psychoanalysis that uh-huh. we call the mirror stage. Yeah. Because I think that what I did to portray my sister has been using denim, which is the fabric of jeans, which is a fabric that I very much associate both with her and with me in the age of the adolescent, of growing up, of childhood as well, but it's very much like the color of my own bedroom rather than her bedroom. And so it's really that work that in which I mirror myself with a portrait more than the others, maybe. And so it's a very sort of imaginary object.
So is this like a dress of a rebellion in contrast to the green dress of your father?
No, this is the because you mean denim is associated with rebellion?
Yeah, or you're dressed in the way this teenager that parents didn't like. I'm just guessing why denim.
It's more the fabric that I do associate with her and with myself when we were child, I think.
She's younger.
She's older. 3 years, yeah. But
was she throwing cushions at you when you were growing up?
Yeah, I think we might have. But I don't have you think because she was imposing her being older to me.
Yeah.
No, she was very kind, actually. She's always been very kind to me. But she's always also been very unable to give an image of herself to the world that really, I think, corresponds to herself.
So she's hiding.
This is, again, like in the paintings before, you know, like, it's hiding, but it's one entity. This is a real object that is composed by a human being and the cushions. And of course here the human being is the life part of the piece and the cushions is the object-based part of the piece, as in the father is the bird and the cushions. But I don't know if she's hiding or she's actually completely exposing herself.
So what was her reaction when she saw herself in this piece?
No, I didn't talk to her.
She didn't see the exhibition?
No, I think she saw the images. I think my mother, who is the only person I do update with my work, and I send images of my work, told her, showed her pieces.
But she didn't tell that this was the sister.
Well, because I think she did. I don't know really. I was not there. I don't live with them at this moment. But it's also like, this is for me the sister. But who tells you that, you know, if you enter this exhibition, if you were in Lisbon and you were entering an exhibition and you would see in this piece more a portrait of your father, for example, I wouldn't really mind. Like, this is not necessarily my sister as well. There is an openness to the objects which I want to keep. Like, yeah.
This is the mother.
Yeah. And the mother, it's a bit like the... you could tell it's a bit the piece in the show that is more elogiative and more eros. You know, it's like a monument to the mother in a way. The fabric that you see in the curtain is for the first time a transparent fabric. So I never made curtains that were that you could see through. They've always been opaque. And for the first time I decided to use this fabric, which is stocking net. It's the fabric that women put for their stockings. So as for the sister piece and the mother piece, there is clothing fabric which is used for this artwork. And I think for me it was a very important step in the work, because I never used this before. And then the mother is represented by a blown up tassel, which was crazy to make. I was like really in an experience. And by real climbers plants, which did grow during the exhibition, and they're now growing in another exhibition, because this piece is now in another museum.
Is this like an umbilical cord?
No, it's the cord of the tassel
that
usually you use to tie back the curtain. I mean, this is really nothing less than a curtain with all its elements.
But the tassel is like, you know, detached from the curtain and blown out of proportions. So where are you?
No, let me say that... where am I? Like, the first idea was that I should have been there as well. But then I found so much of myself in it already.
Yes.
And the title of the exhibition is Me, Mum, Mr. Med, as we mentioned before, which is a play of words in which the M of me substitutes the first letter of each component of the family. So this sort of ego, which is represented by the word me, go at the top of the word mum, which is the only one that survives and remains mom itself. It goes on the top of sister, which still becomes mister. Mm-hmm. And so it made perfectly sense when I thought it backwards that the cushions were blue, for example. And dead becomes man. And this is like, usually with titles I'm quite like that. I have titles before I have an exhibition. Mm-hmm. And then I do structure the exhibition. So I really think in language. So a question that I would like to make to you is like, is the unconscious structured as language or as images? Because I always thought it was as images for me, because I'm a painter, I'm a drawer. So I always thought, like, every time I read, like, the unconscious is structured like a language, it's like, well, not for me. But then sometimes I actually start my working from a play of words, like in this case, Me, Mum, Mr. Man.
Which shows that it is structured as language.
Yeah, I still want to say no, but yeah. But
as you said at the beginning, you know, a cushion can be an object, but it can be a word, which can, you know, have a completely different meaning in your setting. So it appears to me that all the objects that you are using, from tassel to cushion, you know, and, you know, in some way, what you're making out of this object is kind of, let's say, not really using the objects often, sometimes even the words that are, you know, related to this object. That's why, you know, sometimes I see your work with cushion doesn't stand simply as a cushion object, but as a kind of a protecting shield, which means that the word can have different meaning in different settings.
Yeah. I do think that I relate to language also in another way, because for me, you know, figure of speech has always been very interesting and an important aspect of my studies. And in a way, what I made with cushions has been, I think, using them in a sort of synecdotical way, in the sense that the synecdote is this figure of speech that in which a part resembles the whole. And so you say, you know, the wheel of the car and blah, blah, blah. And so the cushion has always been there for standing for a whole, but from a part.
And your last work, I remember that you kind of go back even to some elements of even the bird. Isn't there some work where a bird is kissing man?
Yeah. I just wanted to add about the Mima Mr. Met, something that I a word I invented for these objects, which is neurofurnishing.
Neurofurnishing.
Like, is a neuroscience.
Why?
Replacing psychoanalysis nowadays.
No. We are in Freud's house, you know, the house is still standing. Psychoanalysis has been dying since its beginning, and it's still...
So shall I call them psychofurnishing? No, because that's scary.
So this is your last works.
Yeah, this is my current exhibition here in London at Drawing Projects, and they are new works. They're mostly paintings, and in some cases paintings and objects.
Cushions became white.
Yeah, these works are much more tactile. They started very much with the use of fabric, more than... Yeah, in a way, the fabric is taking more and more importance in the work. Like, at the beginning, I used the fabric to have it pink, as we said. Mm-hmm. It was just like that. And then, with Mima Mr. Met, it became the clothing fabric. So, it was already something else. And here, the fabric is per se one of the elements of the works, I think. Mm-hmm. Very important. I mean, I have to say, all these works have been done in the last year, two maximum, yeah? So, we're not talking yet. So... Some of them might even seem very similar, but for me they're very contemporary at the same time. And what happened with these works has been, this image is important to understand, is that I made a mistake and I bought the fabric, the linen fabric, as with the same width of the stretches bar of the canvases, so I didn't have enough fabric to stretch the painting around, and therefore I was like, what shall I do? Shall I cut the stretches bar of the paintings to 10 centimeters less? Or shall I sew? Because I saw my sewing machine, the suicide, well, I should sew bits of extra fabric in both sides. And this allowed me to stretch the paintings, but at the same time created a saw, which is the main technique that you use to make cushions. So every cushion is made with the saw in all the corners, and then is pulled upside down. Yeah? So, each painting sort of became an inside of the cushion itself that contained the images that after appeared in the paintings, which is the painting practice that is something else. And
This is the one that I remember, the previous one.
This one?
Yeah. This bird reminded me of your father's birds.
I don't know. This is for me an entity, like it's a person rather than two. Mm-hmm. And it's a drawing I made 10 years ago exactly, in 2004. In many of these works, I wanted to reconnect with the moment of my practice, which was before using these elements. So before my practice became actually distinguished by the use of these specific elements. And so see how previous images I created would have related to the new world. Mm-hmm. of mine, and this was a little drawing made in an A4 piece of sheet, and I see it as a kiss, of course, which is what happens in the fabric as well, with the corners and with the sewing, which all these sort of kisses. And
but I was thinking, you know, about the profession you described, you know, the father's profession of dealing with, you know, the tongue and mouth and kissing a bird, which is like his love object, you know, the most important things, as I remember from what you were saying before, were birds, since he collects birds.
Yeah, but I mean, many people ask me if this is a tongue or a beak. And I don't have an answer to that.
Okay. But they do, the guy does have a tassel on the head.
Yeah.
There are birds flying around, like steel-sized birds.
Yeah, because this is a very happy image. I mean, as far as this image, I think, contains a lot of anxiety. Mm. It's a moment in which your anxiety is facing yourself. Because I mean, aren't these like the monsters that we have inside of us, no? It's mm-hmm. like, it's this moment in which you recognize them, and then it's a moment of release of anxiety, so it's a moment of happiness, it's a marriage, it's an acceptance of yourself.
So, what do you most dream?
You mean physically?
Yeah.
I don't dream very much. I mean, I'm sure I do, but I don't remember my dreams, like it's very rare I do, and when I do I have very vague memories of them, and I don't know, like I think this is important in a way, because I don't really, like, you know, I have a connection with surrealism in a sense, because they are the artists that I used to look when I was a teenager and when I discovered art, and in a way these images, especially the Lee and the Chirico, remain into my brain probably very permanently, but my practice is not based on anything that has to do with the paranoid psychoanalytical method at all. Nonetheless, I thought it was interesting. It is interesting to see the work from that perspective, because I think there is a connection, but I do not dream. What do you think this might be?
No, because I was sort of thinking that here is in the cushion you have next to you, you have also kind of a similar figure of this tongue coming out of the mouth of the person, you know, just next to you on your left. And I was thinking whether it's like an image that appeared in your dream.
No, it's an image that appears in my drawings. Which might mean that I'm right saying that the unconscious is structured like an image. Although the tongue is the element we use for the speech.
Yes.
So to make language. But I do draw the tongue. I don't use language in my work as a mean for the work itself. If I did in the past, I now abandon it completely. Like, I'm totally rooted in the tradition of the image making. An image making that talks a lot about speech and talks a lot about maybe desire of speech.
Why did in your previous painting the window appeared without a curtain?
This?
Yeah.
Well, what happened in this painting is that the image I was trying to create didn't come up for many days and even months. So as very often happened with painting and drawings, like it either happened immediately or it's a very frustrating process, because that sort of image that I want to put into the world has difficulty to come alive. And then when I try to destroy it, covering up completely the images that were there before, and in a way, I just had the idea to cover it up with a window, and then it became the painting. I didn't plan it. There are many paintings underneath. At least like 4 or 5 images that didn't work.
So the window here is like a curtain.
Yeah, or maybe it's more like this previous paintings in which you said you tried to destroy your work, but then you made something new. I mean, something very similar happened here, because I tried to cover it up with a threshold, you know, like the window is a threshold as much as the curtain is. So yeah, we could say that this is a curtain, but it's an actual window, and it's white. So white is one of the main elements of the old exhibition. It's the white of the primer, it's the white that I used to, that every painter used to cover a canvas with before starting painting. So it's a constitutional element of the painting practice, which I used as a main element, and actually I also used to paint the floor, so that the whole exhibition would become an actual cushion set.
So you have back your father figure, or cut pianist.
I think this is more like a tragicomical domestic scene, in which, you know, the cushion, the curtain, and the tassels find themselves alone.
Yes.
There is nobody in the house. And they just like trying to question each other's presence in a very sinister way.
Do they tell the secrets of the family to each other?
It might be like in Lacanian philosophy, that the real, the imaginary, and the symbolic are different reals, but they are connected to each other, you know, like through the Borromean's knot.
Yeah.
So they certainly try to talk to each other, but they are, in this image at least, they are quite separated, no? They're quite autonomous. I couldn't say the same in this. Here is a whole orgy, huh?
Yes.
But here is more like really a vivisection of the works themselves.
But your tassel was different in the other image. You know, it had lots of holes. The string, kind of, the previous image.
Which one?
The one, this one. The tassel has kind of moved into the center of your plan.
Yeah, when I paint, I try, one of the reasons why I re-engaged with painting in the last years is certainly to reconnect myself with that moment in which I started to be an artist when I was a teenager and I was painting, and because I want to achieve these moments in which I don't think too much, and I really leave the images talking for that part of myself which I don't dream and I cannot describe very easily, and I try to be as more instinctive as possible, which means most of the cases I'm not able to do it. I'm very consciously in front of the image, in front of the painting, and I feel very bored. And I constantly try to have a moment of suspension, but I continue drawing and painting, and I feel very bored of my practice. And then eventually there are these moments in which I erase all I did, and through elements that remains visible, a new image appears. And this is what happened in this painting, where also there are at least four or five more images underneath. So the tassel was already there before the curtain came up. And then I covered this image, and then the curtain came, and then immediately, when I lose track of what I was doing, I have the precise consciousness that what I'm doing is what has to do, what has to be. Yeah.
Here we also encounter what you had with the Lustvortur, you know, this sort of like a cushion, which in some way can even look like a breast, in that kind of, it's a father's figure.
Yeah, or a nipple.
A nipple, yeah.
Yeah, but this is like something that, you know, one of the aspects of these elements is in fact the fact that the more domestic they are, the more alien they can look to us if we look at them from another perspective. You know, how easy is to take things for granted and things of elements that we daily live with in our life or something that has always been like that, and then all in a sudden invest them and charge them of elements that we never thought about, and I think that's what happens in this in these cases, of course.
Are you slowly moving away from the family, the cushions, the all this? What's the next step?
Well, no, I'm moving away from. I mean, the family is not something I want to re-articulate so specifically as I did in the exhibition that we saw before, in the future for sure. But what I achieved with that exhibition is the use of the objects as allegorical tool for representation after specific texture, like the fabrics and the transparency of the fabrics, or that specific materiality, which I'm gonna use in the future projects for sure. For portraying other things, you know, at the end, like my main urgence is very basic. It's like portraying myself through portraying other things.
Isn't this quite a violent picture?
I think it's quite delicate.
This is kind of sword-like thingy that is kind of coming to the direction of the cushion.
For me, this image came out of a very happy moment of introspection with my own work. So I felt it very delicate in the moment I executed it. It was not thought at all. It's something that I was really driven into for half an hour of the making of it. Mm. And I felt so free in the moment in which I elaborated this image, and in a certain sense I excited, like sexually aroused when I was doing it, which gave me that moment which never happens during the usual way of making your work, you know. Usually I always want to escape this moment of boredom, and I clearly remember when it happened in this work, and that's why maybe I associate a very nice memory with it. And I see that there are many angles and points in the work that might suggest to you something hard or violent.
Because here are elements from the Lustkulturk images, but this, you know, the legs are kind of tied to the floor, and there appears like a possibly behind with tassels coming out of it. So I feel like a lot of the images that we already saw are kind of in a new way coming back here together, and sort of like even a bird-like figures.
Yeah, because that's exactly what's happening in my work right now, is that the Lustkulturk has gone, the family has gone. I mean, as far as I remove things from my works, I free it from references, and I free it from specific circumstances. And actually is what I want to achieve in the new works and in the next works, could be like an independency of this alphabet of mine that has been created, far away from anything else, but able to contain all the past, and the future.
For the end, which image would you give as a present to your father, if you give him one painting as a birthday present?
Oh, the ones we've been looking at.
Yeah.
I'm scanning with my brain because I have no reason to give my father a present if this doesn't make me escape that sort of sense of boredom. Yeah, so all the work is based around creating a moment of provocation towards maybe him, and all of them might be quite appropriate.
So maybe
I would put in his house this piece. Like in his bedroom. with someone hiding inside permanently.
Thank you. Now we will ask our audience for questions.
What are you not trying to achieve?
Isn't that quote by Oscar Wilde, like, there is nothing wrong, there is nothing worse than getting what you desire? There are two things that are very wrong. One is getting what you desire, and the other one is getting it. Which in a way, like, really answers your questions, because, like, what I constantly try to achieve, I mean, what I constantly try to achieve is what will make me happy in the same exact moment in which I would achieve it. And this research for the achievement, in a way, what creates a lot of anxiety in myself, because I am constantly there trying to achieve this image or trying to achieve this work that means something for me and means something for someone else. And that anxiety is exactly the motor of my creativity, because if I didn't have that kind of anxiety, I wouldn't make works and I wouldn't make any artwork. If I would achieve something, that anxiety would be removed. That would be cleared off, because I would have got that, yeah? So there would be nothing worse than achieving it and lose any impetus which builds up my creativity.
Another question? A question for another. What is your connection, philosophical attitude to this artistic work?
Very impressed by Patrizio's work, precisely because he sort of kind of circulates around, you know, very particular objects. And for me, it was a puzzle, you know, why would someone constantly use, you know, only these domestic objects, but then create very, very kind of sexual, and sometimes I even perceive them as violent, you know, images. So that there is definitely some kind of attention for me, and I must say that I have been really deeply impressed by the kind of the family situation, which I found incredibly humorous at the same time. You know, I think it's a wonderful, humorous way to deal with you know, sort of the tensions in the family, just to enlarge the domestic objects. And I think it's a kind of a gentle way of dealing with the kind of family traumas that most of us, in one way or another, why in psychoanalysis we know that you know, art often, you know, comes closer to the traumatic, to the secret, to the elements of truth than words, which is why Freud was also, you know, admiring art. Art can be a form of sublimation, where we are working through a particular traumatic situation, but, you know, more and more we think about art also as a particular sort of speech, you know, a way through which, or as Patrizio said, you know, image can be a form of speech. And for me, you know, the kind of words, images that Patrizio is using shows truly, you know, kind of a new way to deal with the ideas of the unconscious, the family, determining us in one way or another, and, you know, kind of sexual fantasies that are also intertwined with this setting. And, you know, seeing, you know, the tussle in such a sexual way, and, you know, seeing it as a mother, I thought it was a very playful way of kind of dealing with what obviously, you know, the mother represented.
Thank you so much. Coming from a culture, I can see many elements, many narrative elements that resonate with that cultural background. So very quickly, I wanted to take you all the way back to something you said about how you discovered your interest in painting. And you said you heard people around you say that you draw well. So that recognition came to you from, you know, that voice.
From the outside, yeah.
From the outside,
word,
yeah. Do you feel that you have been trapped into that sort of, like, it's like the captive of the lustful curve, like you have been trapped in that enjoyment of painting and maybe discovered that after the event that you actually like painting, but that was not necessarily your vocation? How did that recognition come to you from outside? So I'm just thinking that the captive lady in the story of the Lost Turk, that could be the artist, that could be also your father. And I mean, that idea of being initially in a situation where it is against your own will, and then you discover that you kind of enjoy it. Then you start that whole process of self-mutilation. So I don't know. It seems to me like the narrative of the Gospel of Turk is kind of reproduced in most of what you do. Even the trapped bird in the cage, again, that is an enjoyment that, you know, initially you haven't sought it, but it just was imposed on you in a way. Learn to enjoy it and then kind of own the instrument of that enjoyment through the act of castration. So, does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think with that you might be right. I don't know, in the sense that when do you know whether your vocation is real or not? I mean, this has a lot to do with belief, probably. I don't see any way in which any of us can determine themselves without the environment around us. And therefore, the sort of appreciation that I received when I was a kid certainly established that. And if I'm not wrong, the person that mostly told me that I was good at drawing was certainly my mother. You know, so I might tell you, yeah, you're right. Like, I'm still trying to seduce her. Yes, like, by being a good artist and doing good work, you know, by painting, and like, there has certainly been a moment in which all this though has been processed by myself with my knowledge and my intelligence.
She was happy with your choice of profession.
Yeah, she was happy to the point that she said, why don't you do architecture, isn't it?
father was not
no,
happy.
She was happy. I mean, it's like, of course, she was happy, but she was scared by the kind of choice. So she wouldn't put her son into a dangerous position. But I
she
found...
She would cushion him. And but, the father, what did he say when you chose art?
Well, the thing with my father is that he has never been such a strong figure to impose on my will, you know. So he was always like mumbling about architecture as well, or something that would have been more. But with him, this has never been a problem. Like, I always felt like, but it's a very important point that you're raising because it's really like the mother is this element that is a template for your relationship with everything else. And I might be trapped by the wish to make her happy, or the person that made me these appreciations. But what I was trying to say is that there has certainly been a moment in my experience in which I scanned everything through my knowledge and my intelligence, and I asked myself, is it what I want? And whether the answer was real or fake, this is not very possible to say. I just know that I call my work a vocation because I couldn't do this other ways.
Very quickly, there is a very scary image in Lacan, like he represents the mother with open jaws, and the father is supposed to be the cylinder that keeps it from, you know, being shut, basically. And so, yeah, the father is not playing that role of keeping the jaws open.
Yeah, because Lacan speaks about the praying mantis, you know, for the animal which eats and the man.
Interesting Mediterranean.
Mothers.
It's all about the mothers.
Yes. Mothers with capital M.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or, you know, with a big tassel. Mm-hmm. Any other question? If not, thank you.
The session is
gone. The session is